ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 bottom of 57-58.
Which number or part?
It's 3-2 or 3-3? It's 3-2.
3-2.
The second page. To be inquisitive into the essential meaning of Shastra means to take an active interest in Vedanta philosophy, hence Vedanta Vakya Vicharena. Vedanta is the bona fide way of Brahma Jigasya, inquiry into the one absolute truth imparted by scripture. That is originally given by Vedanta Krit, Sri Krishna himself, and taught by great acharyas in disciplic succession. What does the developed mind achieve by bona fide acquisitiveness? Nishreyasa. The highest benediction of Shastra has to offer. Bhagavatam 2.3.11. The benediction that Brahma attained after studying the Vedas thrice, Bhagavat Yachalo Bhavo, steadfast, spontaneous attraction to Bhagavan Shri Krishna. Nimesha. The great Shreya Vyasa composed the Vedanta Sutra and its natural commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam, to shed light upon the underlying logic of the entire corpus of Vedic literatures. That logic distinguishes the supreme goal of life, called Paramartha, from the mundane goals of civilized society. Notice here it says civilized society. The mundane goals are numbered as four: dharma, occupational duties; artha, economic development; kama, satisfaction of worldly desires; and moksha, salvation from papa karma, sins committed while performing daily duties, while making money, and while satisfying the senses. Unfortunately, the greater part of society is more interested in the four lesser goals than in paramartha. Therefore, Vedanta Sutra and Srimad Bhagavatam teaches that dharma, artha, kama, and moksha have a source. Indeed, the paramartha and the provider of worldly necessities are shown to be one and the same. Purushartha, atta, shabdatiti, bhadarayana. Sage Bhadarayana Vyasadeva, the author of these sutras, declares the true goal of human life to be the supreme sutra, this person. Vedanta Sutra, third part, fourth chapter, first
sutra.
Actually, it's third chapter, fourth pada, right? First chapter. Shonaka Rishi and the other... Shonaka Rishi and the other sages of Naimisharanya find themselves greatly inspired by Suta Goswami's rendition of the learned poetic teachings of Sukadev Goswami to Maharaj Parikit. The sages voice their eagerness to learn from Suta Goswami about their questions, about other questions King Parikit put before his spiritual master, and how they were answered. The sages dismiss those who never hear and chant such topics as having ear holes like the ground holes in which venomous snakes make their dens. When their tongues vibrate, the frogs croak of worldly babble. The snakes crawl from those holes, and following the nonsense sounds to their source, kill the frogs and eat them. In 24th purport, Srila Prabhupada again writes of the solemn purpose of chapter 3, comparing it to the first two chapters of the second canto. Quote, "We should note with profit that in the first three chapters of the second canto, a gradual process of development of devotional service is being presented. In the first chapter, the first step in devotional service for God consciousness by the process of hearing and chanting has been stressed, and a gross conception of the personality of Godhead in his universal form for the beginners is recommended. By such a gross conception of God through the material manifestations of his energy, one is enabled to spiritualize the mind and senses and gradually concentrate the mind upon Lord Vishnu, the Supreme, who is present as the Supersoul in every heart and everywhere, in every atom of the universe. The system of Pancha Upasana, recommending five mental attitudes for the common man, is also enacted for this purpose, namely gradual development, worship of the superior that may be in the form of fire, electricity, the sun, the mass of living entities, Lord Shiva, and at last the impersonal supersoul. The partial representation of Lord Vishnu. They are all nicely described in the second canto, but in the third chapter, further development is prescribed after one has actually reached the stage of Vishnu worship, or pure devotional service. And the mature stage of Vishnu worship is suggested herein in relation to the change of heart. So we see is that Sukadev, the Acharya Srila Prabhupada, is trying to point out to get to the essence here, is that this process, that by being inquisitive, then you can actually get from the scriptures what they have to offer, right? Because if you're inquisitive, means then you'll hear answers. Does that make sense? So it's been pointed out that the process of hearing and chanting has been stressed. So when you hear, then you can chant. First you hear, then you chant. So you'll only hear if you're inquisitive. Does that make sense? So that's how the process goes. If there's an area in our spiritual life that's not developing, then the thing to do is become inquisitive. Because if we're inquisitive about that, then we will hear things about that area that we will then be able to practice. Right? Does that make sense? By hearing, we will be absorbed, so there's chanting. By hearing, then we contemplate that, then we get results. Right? Because we practice it. Does that make sense? So, here they're trying to go, and in this, then, what you should hear about, right? Because there's so many things you could hear about. So they're pointing out that Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha aren't what is actually the point to be heard. The Paramartha, or about Krishna, that's the important thing to hear. But this Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, if they're heard of and practiced in connection with that Paramartha, then they become useful. Right? And then we see is that they take us through these stages of the Paramartha, Prabhupada's pointing out, is first accepting that there's a Supreme. Right? And then that Supreme comes to us through so many manifestations. But the best of those manifestations is as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So then, the natural logic is if we are inquisitive and we hear and chant and worship that Supreme Person, that's the best thing that all the scriptures had to offer. That's actually what's there. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Yeah? A comment. Yes. This point about this homage began reading. That's part of a nature comment that I made to this, I guess you must have covered it last time, a statement by Prabhupada summarizing inquiry. Jigyasa means Vedanta Vakya Vicharina. Vichar means deep study or discussion.
Mm.
Actually, Vedanta Sutra is structured like that. It is a discussion or even argument between different points of view of the subject of what is the goal of the Vedas. So, jigyasa, Prabhupada is saying, inquisitiveness should take this form. Vedanta Vakya Vicharana, you know, this deep study of Vedanta. Vedanta meaning what is the point of the Vedic scriptures? What is the end? And this, Prabhupada says, is inquisitiveness. Previously, it was stated, referred to this verse, that human beings, Shukadeva Goswami urgently calls for all human beings, no matter if they're kamis, akamis, or mokshakamis, to take up bhakti yoga with great force in Rena. So, if you consider this in the context of education, Vedic education, so akami, we'll learn more about akami as actually meaning devotee, But devotee also includes, or should it, brahmanas actually are to be, if they're properly executing their dharma as brahmanas, then they're on some level of Vaishnavism. I mean, if a brahmana is not devoted to Vishnu, then we find in the Shastra so many references that he's condemned. So that's at least the beginning. The brahminical stage of life is the beginning of this akama stage, that even before sannyas, just to be following the principles of brahminical life, that is already evidence that one is overcoming material desire. That's, one can't be a Brahman unless one makes that his ultimate goal of life, to overcome material desire. Mokshakami, as we find in the Bhagavatam, the goal of desiring liberation, that so often pertains to at least the great kings, the great Rajarshis, Kshatriyas, at a certain stage of life. We find King Prachini Barhi, for example, or Maharaj Yudhisthira, for example. Or, yeah, there's repeatedly examples. Even Maharaj Prithu, who's an incarnation of God, when he performed that sacrifice, the four Kumaras, he had just given... This was so wonderful. Maharaj Prithu, who is Shakti Veshavatar of the Lord, had just addressed the people concerning the means, purpose of the sacrifice he was performing, and he was extending that to all their dharmas and ashrams, because that is also sacrifice. So he's saying the point of all this is just to please the Lord. And the four Kumaras came down after he gave this talk, because they were so pleased to hear him. They had heard on the ether waves. So they appeared just to congratulate him that you have given such a wonderful, essential explanation of what is the real meaning of Dharma. And then Maharaj Prithu takes the position of a Kshatriya vis-a-vis Brahmanas. And whatever I have said, but you are the great sages, so you kindly explain now. And he presented himself to be an attached grihastha, and this, needing the instruction of the great sages to extricate himself from his fallen condition, even though it had just been made obvious. Then he was, even the sages, their only purpose in coming was just to congratulate him for having, for being so enlightened in the goal of life. So anyway, this mokshakami in Varna Ashram Dharma is traditionally, I'm not saying it's only a symptom of the Kshatriyas, but at least the great kings, they set that example. They show us that path because they have they have the greatest worldly responsibility there is. That's the Kshatriya Dharma, to lead the world. And yet, at the end of all that, having achieved name and fame and glory and being praised for being so powerful, and then having beautiful wives or concubines, and all of that in full opulence. Yet at the end, they take vanaprastha, they leave all that, and the whole purpose is to attain liberation. And then finally, there are those who frankly remain kamis. So we can draw, a dotted line from there to the Vaishyas. Because Vaishyas in traditional Varnashram Dharma, they may not, till the end of their life, give up the Grihastha Ashram. They may and they may not. It's not something...
They generally retire, but yeah, they don't...
But they don't take formal... Perhaps they might take Vanaprastha, perhaps... It's,
yeah. Well, it's like the son is there. He's at the box where the money is, yeah, running the shop. Then his father is in the corner with his Gita and his japa and all that, yeah, but he's got one eye on the cash box just to make sure the son is doing properly.
So that's a very nice example, so that exemplifies there's still some desire. But in traditional Varna Ashram Dharma, Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, they can all be dvija. They can all accept spiritual masters. They can all receive training in spiritual life. They can all attend the Gurukul. So, the point, the essence of this, why it was stressed here, this Vedanta Vakya Vicharina, is the object of that inquiry. You see, it is clearly given. Vedanta Sutra, of course, is not so accessible to us in this age, but Srimad Bhagavatam certainly is, and Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on Vedanta. So, again, kama, moksha-kami, kami, moksha-kami, or even akami, all of them are pointed in the direction of Krishna. This is where you should be making your inquiry. And all of them can attain the supreme goal of life, no matter what their station may be in terms of varnashram, mm-hmm, you know, in terms mm-hmm of whether or not you've in a representative way completely overcome mm-hmm your desires. But even if you have desires, that desire can be transferred to Krishna. I remember Maharaj and I years ago made a visit to one Marwari life member who explained that they're famous, the most famous class of Vaishyas in India. And he said that our dharma is to try to make as much money as we can, but ethically. And take what is needed for our own maintenance, which should be minimal, and the rest spend for Krishna. So this is God consciousness. This is keeping in focus this statement of from that was quoted from Vedanta Sutra, Purushartha Atta Shabdaditi Badrayana. That sage Badrayana Vyasadeva, the author of these sutras, declares the true goal of human life. You see, Purushartha includes, in the most general way, all the duties of the varnas and the ashrams. That is also, Prabhupada clearly states that. Because artha, besides being just wealth, artha can be particularly ascribed to the Vaishya order. If you take the meaning just to mean wealth. But actually, artha also means meaning. It just means meaning. It's a term used in grammar, for example. When grammar is taught, what is the artha? What is the meaning of a word? Mm-hmm. So, then again, what is the meaning of this Vedic culture? What is it, Vedic knowledge? What is the meaning of the varnas and the ashramas and the duties that we accept in life? So, Vyasadeva concludes, the Supreme Person, who is the source. If he is Atato Brahma Jignyasya, Janmadyasya Yattaha, if he is the source of everything, then he must be the source of these separated goals of the different varnas and ashrams. And this again brings up the question we've discussed this before, ekaina or
bahuvyana,
yeah. You see, or what Krishna says, the mind is fixed, you see? Mind is fixed on one goal, or what is it? Bahushakyanantascha, many branched. You see? Because one can get lost. There's so many Vedic scriptures, there's so many dharmas, shastras, so many injunctions. So one can get lost in one's Vedic study also. That's why Srila Prabhupada is... What he's saying is to make a valid inquiry into spiritual life, we must focus on one goal, and ultimately that goal is Krishna. No matter what our level may be, that can't be taken as an excuse. Well, I still have so many... that's the whole point of this, as we shall, when we go into Shlokana Sharma, why Shukadeva Goswami is raising this question. Because when I wrote this Adhyaya Prakashika, I said we want to look at the logical or skeletal structure of the chapter. So why is it that in this chapter 3, after discussing all these, you know, as what you just heard probably explained previously, purification of the mind and senses, renunciation, coming up to the level of meditation upon the Lord, and then from there entering into devotional service. Why does it seem that suddenly in the third chapter, Shukadeva Goswami goes backwards and starts talking about the worship of so many demigods? Because he's actually now obliging, as spiritual master, his disciple, Maharaj Parikshit, to clearly differentiate between this many-branched mind and the focused mind.
Mm.
You see? So that's what Prabhupada calls here the beginning. We'll sum up, we'll read again that last sentence. They're all nicely described in the second. This means coming up to super soul understanding, which Prabhupada says is still tinged by impersonalism. At last, the impersonal super soul, the partial representative of Lord Vishnu. That, although the super soul is seen, is presented as person, the conception or that meditation is still tinged with impersonalism. You see? Because why do yogis approach the super soul? In general, of course, one may be a pure bhakti yogi and approach the Lord in the heart as Lord Janardhan, and simply, as Shukadeva Goswami indicates earlier, simply want the Lord to reveal his pastimes. Generally, that's not why one goes to, because it's a very great trouble. You see, we were talking about how one can achieve the goal simply by hearing and chanting. You see, that's very easy. So why would one go through all the trouble of this mystic yoga process? Because ultimately of impersonalism. One is too much attached to the jnana process. One is still desirous of achieving mystic powers, mystic insight into the nature of things in this material world. One wants moksha only, or one wants, or put it this way, one wants moksha more than one wants bhakti. You see. So Prabhupada says, but in the third chapter, further development is prescribed after one has actually reached the stage of Vishnu worship or pure devotional service. And the mature stage of Vishnu worship is suggested herein in relation to the change of heart. So we'll let Maharaj begin the Shlokana Sharanam, because what that change of heart means is going to be very clearly delineated by Shukadeva Goswami. Mm-hmm. By seeming to step backwards, he seems to just turn, you know, after explaining all these wonderful things, turn around and go back the other way, back to this Bhavavijnana, you know, fascination with material desires and different deities and so on. But actually, he wants to teach discrimination. And finally, this Vaishnava Vedantic understanding of how to approach the Supreme Lord. Mm-hmm. So, we'll turn it over to Maharaj. Okay. He's essentially that.
There's also just the point, you know, that comes up, is it came up before, is the element of the three stages of the Vedic literatures of Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda. So even though we've dealt with the manifold aspects of the Lord's energies and all that, but we were still looking at it from the Virat Rup, universal form. Well, Upasana means you're actually worshipping a person. And now within worshipping a person, then that means the Supreme Person is the best.
Yeah.
So even though it appears that it's a step backwards because it's going again many branch, but actually it's a step forward because you're focusing on a person, but now it's just a matter of
which person.
Yeah, so yeah, it's
that. That's a very good point.
Yeah. Then just a technical thing on what you had said before. It just came up when you were discussing. You take Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. They also, basically, each one of those is kind of the foundation of each of the four Varnas. What their activity is. The Shudra is Kama, the Vaishya is Artha, the Kshatriya is Dharma, the Brahman is Moksha. But in that you'll find that it's a very interesting divide on that, because the Brahmins and Kshatriyas are very close, the Vaishyas and Shudras are very close, though technically the Vaishyas are in counted with the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. But how they operate this, like that we say Dharma, Artha, Kama, then moksha. So it's going down, then back up. But the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they don't operate it that way. They operate it Dharma, moksha, and out, you know, like that, at least that much. But on it, the Kshatriya situates himself in Dharma, but his focus is on moksha. And the Brahmin, his focus is moksha, but that itself is his dharma. So then so Brahmins and Kshatriyas are very complementary together. That's why you always hear of them together. And then the Vaishyas and the Shudras, then the Vaishya, he is performing Artha so that he can then use the money for Kama. And the Shudra, Kama is his occupation. From that he gets his Artha. Like that. So the focus is slightly different. So where you express yourself through. The Brahmin expresses himself through knowledge, the Kshatriya through religious duties and everything, the Vaishya through economic development, the Shudra through his art. Right? So that was just one technical thing. Then the other that came up was, I thought, the point where you said about Artha. There's the art of where we think is wealth and all those things, but then it also means just substance, you know, gain of something real. Then it struck me that the other four also, the other three must be like that. Dharma means what is the inherent nature that can't change. It's not just the rules, but what is the actual substance. The kama would be what is the activity, the real activity to perform. And the moksha would be the situation of understanding that everything is, you know, connected to the Lord. So in that way, then, even these Purusharthas have their natural, like, spiritual or useful spiritual connection.
Yeah.
Well, that was very good. You took that one.
Well, actually, what Maharaj has filled out here is, again, just the meaning of that sutra. Mm. That what Maharaj has just explained, these, you know, further illuminations on Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, they come out when the Lord is understood to be the source of them, and when they are also understood to be means by which one can attain the Lord, the Lord's devotional service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because certainly Shastra declares it, Vishnu Toshini, that this is the way. If one accepts Varna and Ashram in the attitude of satisfying the Lord, then that is also considered to be devotional service.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise there's a whole discussion in Nectar Devotion about engaging devotion varnashram in if it's devotional service. It's actually one of the chapters, or it's a part of one of the chapters. Later one in the first part, I think, when he's discussing sadhana bhakti, because generally it'll be taken like other sampradayas, is that the kanista means varnashram. The Madhyama means then he's, it's just like this, you know, basically detached situation. Like the Shris call it Sampati.
Sampati means.
Yeah, Sampati, yeah. Is that they just give up everything and just sit and chant. Means where we start, what we talk our new bhaktas into doing, That's what they do after a long lifetime of varnashram. Then they sit down and just chant the holy name and give up all these things. But that's how we get people off the street. You know, we start where they kind of like that. So in there, Rupa Goswami is making the point that following varnashram itself, technically following the rules in themselves, is not devotional service, even though it's from the Lord. But the point is, unless it's directed at the Lord, then only it becomes, but it's the direction at the Lord that makes it devotional service. It's not the varnashram itself is devotional service. It's just like the potato is not devotional service, but that you've offered it to Krishna, the offering makes it devotional service. But otherwise, the potato is a potato. You know, it's just that varnashram is the supreme, best, superior social, political, psychological system that a human being can use. But still, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's still, you know, mundane.
Yeah, this is wonderful. What you've just seen happen here is the drawing of a golden circle, because Maharaj is talking. Actually, what Maharaj is talking about is, in essence, is sambandha. And sambandha is this. Jigyasa begins with inquisitiveness.
Yeah.
One inquires, again, from a bona fide source.
Mm-hmm.
The inquiry has to be, because the whole object of, we can say the object of Vedanta Sutra, if, not that I'm encouraging anyone, because Lord Chaitanya really didn't encourage separate study of Vedanta Sutra, but, you know, in preparing such things as this, I don't think that work. So Vedanta Sutra is focused at moksha, and Bhagavatam takes it further to pure devotional service. But at least the aim in that inquiry has to be, you know, one may be admitting, that's the point of that verse, akama sava kama va. One may admit, actually I'm not right now on the level of moksha, but I'd like to know how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got some obstacles in front of me. But at least one sees one's path.
Mm.
And one understands at the end, the whole point is to simply satisfy Krishna, depend on him. And then all these obstacles will be removed. And as soon as one is accepted by the Lord as a devotee, then one is home free. Well, actually, doesn't have to worry about these, you know, These are more worries of persons who are not, you know, who are more, like Maharaj began, this is where we're talking about the golden circle. They're more karmis, jnanis, or loosely upasakas, you know, in a very loose sense. So that's the meaning of karmakanda, actually. There's this term Prabhupada uses, karmakanda. It's not the same as karma yoga. This is a good distinction. This is something that everyone should, you know, be to your profit to focus in on. Because often devotees make this mistake. They think karma yoga to be the same as karma kanda when it comes up in their reading. But karma kanda is equivalent to that, what is that type of sacrifice that's done according to desire? It's, there's the nitya.
The nitya and naimittik. It's kamika.
Kamika. So karmakanda is in that category. It's equivalent to that. That because I have a desire, so I, you know, look up in the shastra some sacrifice or some puja that I should do to satisfy that desire. And if I'm very materialistic, then, you know, I will go to a demigod. You know, I will see in the Shastra, just as Shukadev, we're going to get to that point, he's going to be recommending, you have this desirable, this demigod. So that all Shukadev is doing here, he's not actually advising us to do this, but he's saying, you find this in the Shastra, and it can become bewildering. If one's mind is not fixed on the goal, inquiring as to what is the real goal of life. Do you see? As long as one's mind remains many branched, and you know, this desire tugs me this way, and this desire tugs me that way. Then I'm on the karmakanda level of Vedic activity. It's pretty much whimsical.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much whimsical.
It's interesting that you mentioned the circle in Sambandha, is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes that in his commentary, I think, on the Shikshastaka, is that actually the whole body of knowledge is Sambandha, but within that then you have the elements of Abhideya and Prayojana. But here then, in relationship to the Chaturvyuha, Sambandha is the knowledge itself. But the point is that knowledge doesn't actually become useful until the prajumna aspect, or desire, or in this case, inquiry, comes up. Right? Means, in other words, if you're dealing with knowledge, then desire means inquiry. Does that make sense? So that's the life of it. Because Shankarshan simply means the field itself, but it's inert. It's not active. But only when there's the desire in the field, then it will move towards a goal, right? And only when you are fixed on the goal, there'll be the activity.
Yeah.
Right? So it's interesting to note that this element of prajumna is so important, right? Because prajumna is the form that Garbhodakshaya Vishnu has taken to manifest the world. So we see is that the actual problem, see, generally we take the problem to be that someone is materially absorbed. You know, it's that absorption that is the problem, or that desire that is the problem, or that lust, or that's the problem. But actually, that's not the real problem. It's that it's misdirected, right? In other words, you have activities. And so, that, like Maharaj is saying, you have a desire. The only reason karmakanda works is because you have a desire to get a result. I have a desire. So therefore I turn to the Shastra, because I'm pious, to get what I want. But I'm still only doing to get what I want. But still, that's the active ingredient, is that desire that you want. And then when that becomes enough, it becomes a need. Right? So then the Sambandha and the Prayojana actually are there, so activity is there. In Gyan, you're fed up with the material world, you want to get out of here. That's your inspiration. Therefore, then you do whatever, get the knowledge, and do the activities to get you out of here. Or Upasana is the same. They have their particular needs or desires, but they see that there's a relationship, there's people. It's not just me and manipulating the material energy. But it's me and a person that I got to go to. And so, but I still have my need or my desire. So then I go. So the having the desire is not the problem, because we want that. That's what spontaneous, that's what mentions here. Brahma, you know, then what he got was this Bhagavat Yachalo Bhavo, steadfast spontaneous attraction. That's what we want. So having attraction, spontaneous, that's what we want. But the problem is we have it now in something else. That's the problem. Does that make sense? So desire to perform activity to get a result, desire to have knowledge to free yourself from, you know, encumbrances and that, or difficulties, desire to interact with people for, you know, benefit, that's not the problem. The problem is that we're not doing it in the right way. It means we should be wanting to benefit that person, that Supreme Person, with our activities, and our intelligence should be used to see that the situations that come up are the most favorable to him. Does that make sense? So this whole science of Krishna consciousness is there, very technical and very thorough, just so that all aspects of distraction on karma, jnana, and upasana that we use selfishly for ourselves is removed, so that we know that karma, jnana, and upasana is actually meant to just enhance our relationship with Krishna and his pleasure. Does that make sense? Yeah? No?
Just in relation to that, we were talking yesterday and complained about, you know, the story of the husband who becomes attracted to a prostitute and Krishna provides the wife flats, you know, so that they can pay for them and the wife.
Why would Krishna encourage it? The question is there's one of the, there's in the Sri Vaishnava tradition, We also accept them. There are 12 like big acharyas, previous acharyas. They were all associates or paraphernalia of Lord Vishnu. So one of them, he was a pujari. He used to bathe the deity every day. And then, and at the same, and during his time, there was this extremely famous prostitute. You know, they're courtesans. They're not these, you know, streetwalkers. They have their own, you know, establishment and everything and that. And you have to be extremely, you know, well-to-do to visit these girls because they act like a wife. They don't, it's not a, you know, a one-time stand. You know, so they act as a wife for however long you got money. When your money runs out, you know, time's up, then next rich guy, like that. You know, so it has its mercenary aspect. So she was the best, and somehow or another, he was so aloof from all this that one day she happened to be sitting in his garden, you know, in amongst the bushes. He was appreciating his garden so much that he was picking flowers. And when he was picking flowers, he was going, ah, here's a nice flower, here's a nice flower, here's a nice flower. And then, because she had, I think, you know, decorated and everything, she was sitting in the bushes. And then he went to pick there, and it was her face. And he said, this is not a flower. And then he went on. So she became insulted. And it's kind of like, I'll show you what flower is. You know, so then a few days later, then it was raining, like that. So she, you know, dressed herself appropriately in something extremely sheer. And went out and sat in the garden and started singing his songs, because he was one of the great devotees, and he made up, they have 4,000 songs, their bhajans. Divya Prabandha. So many of them are his. So she was singing them and very devotionally in that, because his courtesans are very expert in all the arts. So then, you know, and being basically, you know, just aloof from these things, he heard, and that's nice, and he saw she's in the rain, and saying, no, come in, sit, and this and that. And so then, you know, she performs her, how do you say, her religious duties, and starts to attract, you know, the person, and all this, and then she tells, oh, you can come and visit me, and all that. So then, at some point, he goes to visit, but then these ladies have guards, right, and they have a whole army there, so anybody tries to muscle their way in, then they kind of muscle them out into the street, generally out the back into the canal running behind the house. That's generally the popular spot.
Some things remain the same.
Right out the back door into the sewer.
I guess that's why it's called the world's oldest profession.
Yeah. Then he's just wandering the streets, you know, calling her name, this and that. So then the deity, who he would bathe every day, there was this golden pot that he would bathe with. He would fill it up and then like that. So then the deity came and went and knocked on the door and said that this guy sent the pot. And then so she was very happy. So she sent her men out to
find
him. So then He then happily came and all that, and he says, well, how come you're asking me before? You said, you know, you guys don't let me in the door because I don't have any money, so I still have no money, so how is it you're letting me in the door? He says, no, he says, one of your servants came, and he gave me this golden pot and said, you know, this is for you, and this and that, blah. He says, servant? What servant? You know, this was just a guy. Yeah, and then, you know, he says, what does he look like? I don't know, and he described it so he could understand it was the deity. Like that. And then he said, where's this pot? And then he showed the pot, and it was the pot that he would bathe the deity with. So then that, you know, woke him up, and then, you know, he, you know, went back to his service.
I mean, there's you know, like, this is a an example concerning gross lust. Prabhupada told the story of this acharya who, in his commentary on that verse where Krishna says, what is that? Yogi?
Yoga.
Yeah. So he had trouble with this word mom. And Krishna says, I myself provide what my devotees need and preserve what they have. And, you know, I take care personally of my devotees. So he crossed the mom out, and he was very... His household was very impoverished at the time. He went to take his bath, doing duties, and then coming back, meals are supposed to be ready, but There was, you know, when his wife went to the cupboard, as the old poem goes, the cupboard was bare. When she got there, the cupboard was bare.
Well, you're talking about the Hubbard family, right?
No. And but then there was a knock on the door, and a cowherd boy was there and had all, you know, pots of different milk preparations and sabjis and grains and everything, you know, and he just presenting himself as a cowherd boy. Said, "I brought all these things for your husband. We are very, 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 very close. And so he's such a good brahmana and so fixed in his duties and so devoted. So I'm personally bringing all these things for him." But then she noticed scratches on the body of this. She was, you know, very attractive. It was a very, very attractive young cowherd boy. And she wanted to know, "Who did this to you?" And the boy said, "Your husband." Because he had just X'd out mom, which, you know, Krishna himself spoke in the Gita. He just couldn't accept that. He thought it was some kind of, you know, transcription mistake. You know, the person who transcribed that edition, that copy of the Gita for him, had just made a mistake. So it's the same thing, but it's in the as this story was just in the realm of jnana. It's in the realm of knowledge. But it's the same thing that the Lord, this is also the point you find in his pastimes, is to, he seems to allow or even encourage something, but the whole point of it is to snap the devotee out of it. Yeah, I mean, there are countless examples of this. And they're in different levels. Even Goswamis, there are things like that.
Yeah. You understand it, because it's connected with the person. It's just like this. Okay, you have a material desire, and it's very important for you, and you can't get it out of your mind. You have to fulfill it. Okay, so now you have, according to just now what Maharaj has brought up on this point, then we can see we actually have two alternatives, you know, according to this verse, the Sarvokami. You can separately make your endeavor to fulfill that material desire. Or you can go to Krishna, who is actually the one who fulfills it. Now, if we look at it, the reason that we would want to do it ourselves is we would say that it's actually, you know, I'm ashamed, and so that humble state, that's why. And if I go to Krishna, that would be, you know, improper, right? So we actually put on it that my separate endeavor to fulfill my needs without including Krishna in the process is actually humble. But actually, if you look at it, that's pride. And if you act, so means I'm separate, I can fulfill my own desires, I don't really need God. So, but the other one where you actually go to God, then if you understand this way, then it reverses, and actually then you're humble. Is that I have these desires, I can't get rid of them, how to fulfill these. But at the same time as in fulfilling them, I do want them to go away. That's like Kardama Muni. He was a first-class brahmachari, went to the Lord, "I have these desires for family life, so can you please arrange a nice girl so that we can have proper family life, so that at the end of it I can again come back and be completely absorbed in your worship rather than now being absorbed but distracted." So that's humble, because in the contemporary, you know, model, then we think that it's actually being proud to deal with the Lord, but it's being humble to not. But it's actually the opposite, because of the principle that Krishna gives is irreligion becomes religion, religion becomes irreligion. So the point is if you actually understand that actually only Krishna can fulfill it, that creates humility. But it's because you think I can fulfill it that creates pride. Does that make sense? So this inability means, in other words, what's blocking our ability to understand that Krishna, because of his affection for his devotees, even though the interaction is not with him, it's with his energies, but still he has affection for the devotee. Right? So how could God do that? Why? God is not this nasty guy that sits there, that little, you know, thunderbolts come out the end of his finger every time you do something wrong. You know, that is for those who are proud. But for those who are humble, he is actually a very nice person. Right? It's not that that's his, it's like this. You have a relationship, and if you can get both people to interact equally, that's considered ideal. But if you can't get that, then at least I'll interact even if the other doesn't respond. Right? And because of affection, I can do that. Right? Isn't that better? Okay. So that means God's going to interact with the living entity even though they don't respond. Right? But he's very clever that he does it in such a way that you would notice that it's him. So if you're humble in that, then it's like Krishna's fulfilling all these desires. That's so stupid. He's doing something for me. Now what am I doing for him? Okay, I have this desire. It's so important to me. It's everything for me. It's so distracting. I even think of it and not Krishna. Krishna people that you could have even better relationship with. They actually talk back, you know, I mean, they respond, they give you things, they do stuff. You know, the other one has to be all imaginary. Is that?
You can preview, it's just a little preview from Jiva Goswami's commentary that we included
at the end of this.
So he cites Srimad Bhagavatam 5.19.27. Which state this Prabhupada's translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead fulfills the material desires of a devotee who approaches him with such motives. In other words, here's a devotee approaching the Lord as if he was a demigod. But he does not bestow benedictions upon the devotee that will cause him to demand more benedictions again. However, the Lord willingly gives the devotee shelter at his own lotus feet, even though such a person does not aspire for it. And that shelter satisfies all his desires. That is the Supreme Personality's special mercy.
You see? Like that. The point is God's a person. And he's the nicest guy, right? That's the whole thing. Yes?
But in that incident, he's not fulfilled all my desires.
No, but here, he doesn't fulfill your desires, but after them not being fulfilled, did you drop them? You know what I'm saying? Did you lose them? You understand? It's like this, because there's a technique by giving the desire, fulfilling the desire, then it may be it's fulfilled and then you'll drop it. But like he said, if by giving it, it will simply increase it and you'll become more and more forgetful, then he holds it back. Because then out of frustration, you'll say, what's the use of this? And then you'll drop it. Then you'll probably find when you do that, that's when he fulfills it. The point is he's going to fulfill it when it works, not when you want it. Like that. The point is it may be immediate if it gives a result, but if it doesn't, not going to give the results, he won't give it immediately. That's the difference between him and a demigod. You know, the modes of nature, the demigods, you've done the ritual, you get your result, bus. You know, if it's 2 weeks to process, you get it in 2 weeks, that's it. But with Krishna, even though maybe the rule is 2 weeks, he may give it after a year. You know, if by giving it to you in 2 weeks it's going to be bad for your development, he won't give it to you. Unless, of course, you're insincere. Then he'll give it to you and you'll be taken and thrown. Like that. You know, thrown out of the devotional circle. Like that. But if you're sincere, you wanted to worship Krishna, then Krishna will fulfill it at his time when it's actually good for you. So that's the whole thing, you know. Because then it's kind of like, well, if he's not fulfilling my desires, well, why not? You know, so if he wants a relationship and this and that, then therefore, then maybe filling those is not good for the relationship. So why they're not good? And so it creates inquiry. That's why this inquisitiveness is what gives everything. This inquisitiveness will give you spontaneous attraction to Sri Krishna. Right? So it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile. Like that? Mm-hmm. 2 minutes left. A little soft shoe or something.
Oh, maybe you can read the first paragraph.
Okay. Shri Shlokana Saranam. So this is verses 1-7. Sri Sukadev Goswami states that he has now answered Maharaj Parikit's questions as to the duty of one on the threshold of death. A thoughtful man should hear Krishna Katha, but what if what it has to other desires? One should worship and fix his mind only on Krishna. Worship and fix his mind only on Krishna for spiritual attainments, and for achieving material benefits, should one worship demigods? Right? In other words, you turn to Krishna for spiritual, you go to the demigods for material. As a prelude to answering this question, Sukadeva Goswami begins by mentioning
at length.
Okay. I was trying to think, is this a Latin phrase or something? Patlinthanum or something. The Vedic directions that are to be followed by conditioned souls entertaining so many material desires. When desiring to become absorbed in personal Brahma Jyoti, should worship Lord Brahma or Brihaspati. When desiring powerful sex, should worship Indra, etc. So, yeah, as he's pointing out, he will change this. This is where you go for them. But you should understand, because otherwise you think, I will get it myself. But no, you're dependent upon someone else. And then from this dependence, by taking it a step further, Indra and Brihaspati and Brahma get their power from Krishna. So technically it should go to Krishna. So it's not that you would separately worship demigods. Right? Okay. We'll discuss more on this tomorrow. At least.
Nityananda Trayodasi, that's the last day?
I think that comes, basically, this would be the last week. It means these 4 days, because then,
Nityananda Trayodasi is the 31st, right?
Yeah, I think it's, the Ekadasi is Monday, Ramana Dwadasi would be Tuesday. And then it would be Nityananda Trayodasi. Yeah. So either we finish with these 4 days, or we could do 2 days next week. But what generally why we close is because now the senior men come, like I already saw some of the GBC. So they start giving class. So we could just maybe, Vagish is not here, can inquire when they're all being arranged for classes. Because generally when that happens, that's when we stop. Yeah. And then we'll start again after the Gaur Purnima? the first.
The schedule of that needs to be checked. It's not the choice. This is a little early this year.
So. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying. I think it's Wednesday week.
Yeah.
So the maximum we could go is next, Monday and Tuesday of next week.
Actually, I haven't heard when the GBC is supposed to arrive.
I heard second they arrive, they start arriving for the EC, and then you said fifth.
Yeah.
Fifth is the full meeting, so but the second, third, fourth is the EC. So generally from what I've seen is already things are hopping and they're already giving classes and that. Because what they generally do is they cut out the Bengali and they only do the, you know, in the temple, just the senior men, so we don't run at that time.
Okay.
Jaiho. Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Ramadeta Bhaktivarinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Upremanandi.